How are you?
Good, thanks.
It is Susan from MERP, and I'm here with Ivar.
Yes.
Ivar, not Ivar, right?
It's up to you.
Here in America, we would say Ivar.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you, too, we would also say Grutel, but it's Grutle?
Grutle, yeah.
Grutle, okay. You were exposed to heavy music as a kid.
Yes.
I believe you said that it was Anthrax and Suicidal Tendencies with your dad?
Yeah, that was the first the real kind of bands that I got into, but I would say Kiss even before that. For Norwegian Kinder television, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had a thing on Saturdays, it was popular with the smallest kids and teenagers, because it was about this family with a little boy and his teenage daughter. So I guess we kind of were interested in both of those. It was exciting, intriguing with the girl, of course, like a bigger girl, and she was really into Kiss. So at the end of every episode, somehow the Norwegian broadcasting got a deal with Gene Simmons. So there was these little snippets of her dancing to a Kiss song with him and stuff, and getting on stage for the song and things like that. So I got really fascinated by all the fire and skulls and that stuff.
Did you like Kiss's music, or was it more the visual of it?
I can't remember having any particular thoughts about the music. No, I was 5, 6 or something. But it was cool because my granddad, he noticed and he recognized their faces on a cassette tape at the store. So he bought that as a Christmas. Once I came to visit him, he had there you go, you like these guys, right? And then I started listening to it too and really got into it.
Yeah, they are an amazing band, but I've never loved their music, but they're so fascinating. Beth, I like. I like that song.
Yeah.
It's the only song.
I like the Escape from the Elder, especially. Escape from the Island, all that stuff. Their so-called progressive album, which they hate themselves, of course.
Now, when you went with your dad, I read in a prior interview that he was comfortable with how people handled each other and kind of the camaraderie. And I wanted to ask you, today, with the metalcore kids and they kind of set out to hurt people, do you have any thoughts on if there's still the same kind of camaraderie today in metal?
I think I think metal has developed into several subcultures, I guess. And I guess now you have the good old brotherhood of metal is still there, but I think the kids who get into it, some of them, I guess, or I don't know percentage wise, but a lot of them still get into it because of that, because they feel it's the qualification to be sort of part of the scene is dedication and some kind of overview. You can sort of nerd your way into becoming an integral part of your local scene. Oh, that's the guy with the insane vinyl collection, or ask her about grindcore. She knows all the French horrible grindcore bands. That kind of stuff gives point. Or you could. It's not enough to be in the rest of the world where stuff is about likes and that stuff. And I think some of the modern metal culture is more in tune with the rest of, I think, the very, not even egocentrical, but egomanical, some kind of psychosis that we're going through. And you can see that in metalcore, I think, too. It's all about being very sort of bro-ish and all that stuff with, that's when I started feeling old, a couple of years ago, when I saw all those reports of women who has to dress in a particular ways. If they're going to crowd surf, they're going to have to secure parts of their bodies and stuff, because they'll get all these. I'm like, what the fuck? When does this shit start to happen? It's horrible. So yeah, I think it's in all aspects, the whole at some point metal started getting a little bit confused when punk disappeared. Then I think people started confusing it a little bit, so they thought hey, metal is a good way to get people to be afraid of you, or be the craziest kid on the block, and they'll see stuff do what thou wilt, Aleister Crowley, and they think it's about barfing in people's shoes or taking their wallets at gigs, the whole philosophical thing kind of just disappeared.
It seems like nothing to, nothing bad about millennials, but it seems like back when we were kids, I mean, I'm older than you, but when we were kids, if you were on the baseball team and you weren't good, you sat on the bench. Now it's everybody gets a trophy, and it kind of feels that way here. There's so much entitlement and anger, and the world's just different.
Yeah, it's very different. I think for some stuff is good, because information is available and it creates a path, I guess, towards success or self-development for people who didn't have that before. I think especially people outside of major Western cities can sort of get somewhere with their talents through the internet, which is great. I mean, like the globalism only works up to a certain point before people start exploiting it. It just makes it even worse for people who had a tough time from before. So.
I read something that I had to think about with Enslaved. It was a quote where somebody said, "Enslaved is heavy but surprisingly soft." And so I thought about that a lot, and I think it means heavy because of the genre and soft because it's beautiful. And I wondered what your interpretation of that quote was.
I think it's great that people have an opinion, and that's a very nice opinion, I think, to have. I think it's because we include many facets, like there's an aggression in it, and sometimes it's, you know, it's pure aggression, and it's sort of feeling male aggression that doesn't run on its teeth, and other times it's more of the mellow things where you feel your warlike or aggressive tendencies are there to protect. It can be, you know, family or a little baby or things like that. So there's very, very fragile, mellow things also that's a source for all these pounding on your chest kind of thing. And I think that's also a very interesting thing. It makes for great art, all these crossroads between sort of vulnerability and bloodlust in a sense, you know, because they... One can't exist with the other, without the other. You know, all these positive emotions, which is about protecting and taking care of things, also comes with a lot of, you know, we're animals too. So it's at some point you get in touch with both sides, and I think we like that. Also, I think there's something with the music. We like to create spaces that's about maybe a feeling of parallel histories in a sense. That's something that I really love. Both musically and in the lyrics, because, you know, life is what it is, which is all the events that happen up to now, but with our fantasy and ability to dream and daydream, we're also able to create parallel histories for ourselves and for the universe around us. I think that's a great thing to use arts.
You were fascinating to research. I did that over the last couple of days, and there's so many things to talk to you about rather than just music, but I'll try to keep it to just music. I won't have this exact, but you said something like, you know, as human beings, we need to have a sense of belonging, and we need to find an elevated place to not feel so minuscule. I think that's sort of close to what you said, and you said people can find it in music. Do you think that if more people understood music as being like the audible form of emotion, that the world would be a better place?
Yeah, I also think you could also transfer that to other things. That is just anything that sort of puts you on that. I think that's also modern religion knows that and sort of in a very cynical way has exploited that they've taken that away, sort of that joy of having something that's yours and gives you a sense of something holy in a sense. You know, but I also think that could be if you have a talent for carpentry or handwork, quilting, whatever, that you can, if you really go into these things and explore your abilities, it elevates you. And I think because just to have the sense of being one in 7 or 8 billion or however many people we are right now, makes it difficult to feel like a coherent existence, I think, because everything's so chaotic, floating around, and everything's like a game of chance and all that stuff. So I think we need those places. And how exactly achieve it, I'm not sure if everybody is up for music. That seems to be the biggest common denominator. That's when people gather and when there's a crisis, when there's something extraordinarily good happen, we tend to go for the music, you know, for the simplest songs, you know, in a sports stadium, whatever.
That's the other thing. I read a quote where you said that sometimes you have to go to the extremely complex to realize that the simple it can be better. And I think that it feels like our world is so chaotic right now. I wonder what we have to do to get to that simple again. I don't know if it's possible.
I think you can see it in some of the movements within culture also and music with this whole, not necessarily just a pagan, because the word pagan sort of just sounds very limited to Northern Europe. But I think you can see it around the world. People gravitate towards that in China, in Asia, South America, everywhere. People gravitate towards those sort of ancestral traditions and cultures tourism has been big. We see that in Norway. They research it. Like, a lot of the tourists that come and are attracted to the whole like Viking thing. Not, some of them, of course, are like, you know, dudes who want to punch each other with plastic swords. But a lot of people just like that sense of looking back at something when things, as you say, they were simpler, maybe. And things were about community and sort of belonging to something that's bigger than yourself without that bigger thing than yourself exploiting you and threatening you all the time. Like I always say, like the church has done a lot of. Gives you a sense of belonging, but it also tells you you're going to burn in hell forever and have people poke you with pitchforks. So that's not really a good arrogance, right. I would say. No.
In America, we're such a mishmash of ethnicity. I mean, I'm like 10 different things, allegedly. I just did my DNA, so we'll find out. But we have an impression that, like, when you come from Norway, that you're a pure ethnicity. Have you ever researched it back to find out if you are?
I'm pretty sure that we were not. Actually, that's I'm in a part of a project with Aina from Varduna. We did the last album was our debut last 2 years ago. Was about the Norwegian history and Norwegian constitution. And now we've researched we took like a micro thing where we looked at a stretch of Norwegian coast and researched together with some writers and scientists, went out to these places and tried to get an overview of how Norway was populated. And that's we have a new album coming out about that. And the cliche is like you have all these warrior dudes coming from, I guess, we all seem to originate around the Indus, the valley of, you know, India, and then going into Central Europe, and then they drummed up some Viking-ish, certain Viking-ish vibe in Germany, and then they went to Norway. But the truth is far from that. That's one part of it. There's also a lot of migration from Siberia, Mongolia areas, and coming down. So the coastline of Norway was just like this enormous melting pot. All the cultures got there, and you can hear it in the music. We talked with the traditional Norwegian fiddler, which they in one of the valleys they had this thing where they like tune down their fiddles very low, and it sounds very metal, you know. And they had this thing where they went to Kazakhstan and they met some old dudes there with the fiddles, and they were like, "Wait, we're going to show you something special." And they did the same thing with the fiddle. They pitched it down, and they all went like, "Oh my god, there must have been some common ground here at some point, you know." Somebody brought their horsehair fiddle west and ended up. So that was very learning for us, and it sort of that's the point of view we always had, that the Viking culture, the Viking is a verb. It's going, that's what how they used it. They were going Viking. That means getting a new boat and just going, having no idea what's going to happen. And then it's in modern day interpretation has ended up like a description of something that's static, you know. And something that defends itself, and that's how it's being misused also politically. That it's like sort of a wall around something. It's the opposite. It's a spearhead going out and bringing stuff back. Music. If you go to Istanbul, we're going there to play in April. We're going to the Blue Mosque. They have some graffiti, Viking graffiti, where I guess the boys were having a drink. So they're writing stuff like we've seen a tour bus like this, and this guy is gay. And, you know. This guy kissed this guy when he drank and stuff like that, like typical banter. But so definitely, no, I think that's the strength of the Norse culture is that it really took in all sorts of the contemporary cultures and sort of shaped it into something new.
You are the guitarist for Enslaved, but you also play keys. You've played keys in some pretty big bands. Did you just get stuck playing the guitar in Enslaved and you love keyboards? Do you love one more than the other?
I would be a guitarist if I had to choose one, but I still play a lot of keys, I still compose a lot of keys. I did try to do both for a little while because I watched a live video with Rush and I saw Geddy Lee playing keys with his feet. I tried that for a while, you know, with woolen socks, but it was just too complicated. So if I could, I would do both.
Did you get a chance to see Rush before they retired?
No, I didn't. And a certain singer keeps rubbing that in my face.
Oh, no.
A lot. He did.
Yeah, I've seen him as well. Yeah. You were named like the 22nd best guitarist by Metal Sucks, and you guys have had some really, you know, nice critical acclaim. Do you pay attention to that? Is it important to you?
I can say that I'm actively looking around for that kind of stuff, but I do definitely take it to heart when it shows up. Not necessarily because of the placement on the list because it's not like sports, you know. If I was the 22nd in some kind of ski competition, that would be a tangible thing. Okay, so these 21 other guys went faster. But it's fun to be on the list because it turns out somebody had some kind of... They have had an experience with my guitar playing and had some thoughts about it. Then I think that's great to have that kind of attention. It's the eternal, you know, the stupid two-sidedness that David Bowie described, like give me some privacy, look at me kind of thing all the time. That I recognize, you know, there's a reason for it. There's a certain ego that needs to be fed. And those kind of things really help.
I've seen the album E that you're touring on described as like organic and earthy and natural. Is that intentional, or did that come? Do you think that comes from maturity? Did you set out to do it that way? Do you agree with that description?
I agree, and it's something that we didn't really start. Back to the thing about going through complexity to arrive at simplicity, and having worked on a lot of albums up to 2008 with Vertebrae. That's when I first time I met Joe Barresi, the producer from LA. Was just, I can't remember exactly how, but somehow there was a connection. It was Habon, our previous keyboard player, right? He'd had another album mixed at Joe Barresi's place, because Joe Barresi was the only guy who answered when he sent a bunch of mails to like big producers about mixing this small Norwegian band. So that's how we got in touch. And he had been mixing and I guess co-produced all this stuff with Tool and Queens of the Stone Age and shit. So when I met him in LA, we're going for blueberry pancakes and coffee, and I was like, can I ask you, can you tell us something about the recording of the this and that Tool song, you know? And he described it, with building all the effects. And I was so starstruck, and I asked sort of more as a thing of just seeing what he had to say, like, what would you recommend we do to get a better sound? Like, and it was so simple what he said, like, I've seen you guys live, and you sound more than good enough, so what you need to do is just, like, replicate that in the studio. Don't think how to do it, like, clever or anything. Just try and get you five guys to sound how you sound. You're on that side of the stage, you go in that speaker, the other guitarist in that speaker, and you have the drummer in the center. And that really, like, yeah. Sounds too simple to be, you know, true, but it really was true. That's how we started thinking after that conversation. I think that really helped us.
You and Grootle have been together for a very long time, the two of you in this band. Do you ever get tired of each other?
I guess, no, we don't get tired of each other. We have idiosyncrasies that we get fed up with. You know, he's a very, how can you say, he's more of an extrovert, the sort of the center of the party kind of thing. That can tire me a little bit sometimes when I like get me just be quiet and stuff, and that would annoy him. Like, why why do we have to do these boring things all the time? So, but it's a good, very good balance. But it's just a little bit of, it's like more of a familiar thing. Like, his mother has this theory that we've been around each other so much that it's changed our appearance or something. She claims that we look alike, that we totally deny that, but that's what she says.
That's a common thing when people get married. They say that you kind of, you know, find some commonalities in your appearance. Yes. I don't want to look like any of my husbands, but there have been a few. I have two questions left for you. I believe you said that you hope that Enslaved becomes like a sound of subconscious.
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Can you explain what that means?
I want to, you know, the language of, at least my perception of what the subconscious is, whatever, how it functions. It's got this. It seemingly has this language which is just pure association, and pictures and colors, and I guess you see that in dreams, for instance. That it doesn't necessarily make sense. Like a person enters a room, and that turns into something that's red, and then it goes to, a certain association to a color or smell or things like that, and for music to work like that, to sort of initiate those kind of processes in the mind of the listener, is really what I would want with the music, because that's the experiences I've had with my favorite music too. Is like 5 minutes with a Pink Floyd song or whatever, great song I'm listening to. And you, all of a sudden you can have gone 20 years back and 30 years forth and all these kind of things. And you meet people again in your thoughts. And the song is over and you can't really describe what happened, but you have some kind of insight or whatever. Or just maybe a break from everything. It's a great thing.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I feel I talked a lot.
Good.
And that was it was fun.
Good. Thank you very much.